Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 22nd day of January, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Ault, and I struggled a bit trying to choose a representative story to lead off this evening and at least start to attempt to characterize a week where literally cognitive dissonance is probably the phrase that best describes what Americans, and indeed most of the world, is being subjected to. The kind of crap that we've been fed for so long is literally falling apart at the seams. People are saying, hey, I realize they're lying to me, well, just about everywhere you can imagine, but wow, how do I make sense of all of this? Empty store shelves, people taking the poison poke and then having heart attacks, strokes, or just dying outright for reasons that Big Brother obviously doesn't want to tell you about. World War III is now closer than it's ever been in just about anybody's living memory, but most Americans are oblivious to that. What they do know, though, is that the guy in the White House really is senile. The conspiracy theorists were right all along, and it's now impossible to hide. What's worse, everybody in the world knows it, and those that aren't laughing are making invasion plans. So I decided to start more or less about there, and to put this in perspective, we really do need to do it, more or less anyway, in chronological order. And we'll start all the way back over the weekend, before the infamous press conference from what could pass for the old folks' Alzheimer's sanitarium, when the Biden viewer tipped his hand and did one of those, oops, old guy accidentally admits the truth kind of things. This time concerning actual terrorism from an extremist Muslim Pakistani that was allowed in by the Biden regime, only to end up showing, among other things, just how futile their idiotic gun control laws really are, just how low the FBI is still willing to sink, if we didn't already know on that score, and who Big Brother and his CCP puppet actually believe are the real enemy. The Marionette-in-Chief read from his PC talking points again over the weekend, asked whether there was sufficient information to know why that Muslim terrorist targeted the synagogue in Texas. The empty suit containing the Biden Fuhrer said this, if you can understand it.
Well, no, I don't. I don't think there is sufficient information to know about why he targeted that synagogue.
Time out here. I know it's pointless to expect the senile to actually make sense. And we've known for years that the far left could care less about intellectual consistency. But these are people who claim to know your motives from the time you get up until the time you go to sleep and everywhere in between, too. They know you're white. They know you're a white supremacist. They know you're a terrorist. They know that if you don't want to take the poison poke, you shouldn't be allowed to buy or sell or maybe even draw breath, much less have a job or, for crying out loud, or a firearm. And they know that the motive of every single person who's been held for a year without trial, because they just happen to be somewhere in the vicinity of the D.C. swamp on January the 6th, is not only a domestic terrorist, but an insurrectionist, probably deserving of the death penalty. Or at least, continued life in prison. And they for sure don't need facts to establish that, much less a speedy trial by a jury of their peers. Listen to this guy.
Well, no, I don't. I don't think there is sufficient information to know about why he targeted that synagogue, why he insisted on the release of someone who's been in prison for over 10 years, why he was engaged, why he was using anti-Semitic and anti-Israeli comments. We just don't have enough facts.
But you, all you useless eaters out there, people who won't take their vaccine and booster after booster after booster, and dare to think I stole the election, I know you're domestic terrorists, and I will end you. Oh yeah, and I don't need facts. But that turned out to be just the opening act in this week's senile circus. Midweek, the Biden Fuhrer gave a long-awaited press conference, only the second in his entire fake presidency, and the big hype beforehand was that he would attempt to go it solo. And with this guy, you know that doesn't mean what it used to either. And those who have been covering for him are shocked and amazed, even, that he managed to drag it out for nearly 2 pain-filled hours. And for at least a little while afterwards, that was the primary story, and of course, the spin. Oh yeah, look, he managed to get through it. About the only thing he actually said of any real consequence was the admission that he expects Russia will probably attempt to invade Ukraine, and pretty much any time now. But, he said, if they do, the economic costs will be extremely heavy. What do you bet he was talking about the United States, more so than Russia? Oh, quick aside here. This would almost be funny if it wasn't so tragic, given World War III. Says a headline from the Daily Mail in the UK, there are no minor incursions. And the furious Ukraine president schooled Biden after his blundering press conference where he greenlit a limited Russian invasion into Ukraine. Wait a minute. Doesn't this guy know he's the puppet of the puppet? You got nothing to say about anything. And in a related story, the Daily Mail did say that Biden's first press conference in 78 days was, in fact, a, quote, total disaster, because he even claimed to have overperformed during his first year, despite rampant inflation and his tanking approval, as well as all the other debacles, like the surrender of $80-plus billion of American weaponry in Afghanistan to Taliban terrorists. Still, though, the best summary I saw of the whole ordeal came via Kevin Dalton, quoted in Zero Hedge, saying, it may have been rambling and incoherent at times, but boy was it long. But honestly, folks, the statement that I thought was the most Clintonian, and therefore about as close as he got to the truth, was this one, where early in his opening statement, the Biden Fuhrer said he wouldn't simply accept the status quo as a new normal. Quote, I'm not going to give up and accept things as they are now. Some people call it a new normal. I call it a job not yet finished, unquote. And yeah, folks, there are still kids under the age of 5 yet to be poison poked. Inflation hasn't yet even hit double digits, officially anyway, but it will. There are still occasionally some foodstuffs on neighborhood grocery store shelves. The U.S. military has been weakened to the point of self-destruction, but hasn't yet been quite completely destroyed and undermined. Maybe we'll see that over the next few weeks. And obviously, there are more and more Americans waking up to the fact that he intends to kill them. And they haven't yet been completely disarmed, injected with Zyklon B, or sent to the concentration camps. So, yeah, it certainly is a job not yet finished. But what really amused your host, and yes, it was definitely encouraging, too, was how the narrative shifted and evolved over the next 24 hours. Eventually, people were openly calling the Biden press conference a train wreck, or worse. The fact that the guy is about 6 sandwiches short of a picnic is getting pretty hard to hide. Why, just how bad is it? The straight man might ask. It was so bad that they had to send Kamala Heels in the Air Harris out on a disaster recovery tour. And guess how that went over. And it was so bad that failed leftist presidential candidate Andrew Yang, citing sources within what now passes for the Democratic Party, said it's unlikely that sleepy quid pro Joe will run again for president in 2024, if he's even alive, folks. And the donors are sitting back, waiting for a better candidate, how about any candidate, to emerge. Why, it was so bad that the only thing you're not hearing, and you're not gonna hear, is about the 25th Amendment, which should have been obvious at least a year ago. And how's this for a thigh slapper? In that same email, Yang said that the sense is deepening that Joe may not run for a second term. Arguably, the only thing that still runs on this guy, and I guess we can't say it bluntly, are, let's put it kindly, adult pampers. Before Thursday was out, however, even the leftist press was starting to say, ooh, we got a real problem here. They knew it all along, folks, but now it's gotten so bad even the CNN watchers are starting to realize something is really wrong. This headline from the Daily Mail, I think, is a great summary. Quote, this mumbling, stumbling president is a clear and present danger to world peace. The security of Europe is on a knife edge. The credibility of the United States, hardy har, is on the line, and America's allies are looking for a cool head. How about anybody that actually has a head that still works? The message, writes Dominic Green, is unmistakable. At his first press conference since November, Joe Biden, among other things, gave Vladimir Putin the green light to attack Ukraine. He said things like, Russia will be held accountable if it invades Ukraine, but then added, well, that depends on what it does. It's one thing if it's a minor incursion, and then we'll end up having a fight about what to do and not do, etc. Said the ventriloquist dummy who went off script. But if they actually do what they're capable of doing with the force amassed on the border, it's going to be a disaster. Yeah, for Russia. In other words, said Green, Putin is just welcome to sink his teeth into a European state and an American ally, just so long as he doesn't take too big a bite. And here, folks, I think Dominic Green missed the real point. What Biden was really saying was, go ahead and take anything you want in Europe, but for crying out loud, please, just don't nuke the swamp, at least not until I can get in the bunker. But the coverage of the press conference wouldn't be complete without at least a clip like plenty of these to pick from, this one.
Oh, I think it could be, but I hope in God that they're, that, look, maybe I'm kidding myself. But as time goes on, the voter who is just trying to figure out, as I said, how to take care of their family, put three squares on the table, stay safe, be able to pay their mortgage or their rent, et cetera, is becoming much more informed on the the motives of some of the political players and some of the and the political parties.
Was that an admission of what they've been up to? Honestly, it's hard to tell. And what was the question you might be thinking? Does it really matter? Nobody listening knew what the answer had anything to do with. So I return again to his opening statement, while Biden's drugs were still working and he could read the teleprompter. Quote, I'm not going to give up and accept things as they are now. Some people call it a new normal. I call it a job not yet finished. Unquote. So, yeah, it certainly is a job not yet finished. But America certainly might be. From there, let's move on to the obviously related story of World War III with this update. Mostly in chronological order from earlier in the week, and starting with the propaganda from Europe and the Daily Mail, which says in their headline that British troops are being sent to the Ukraine. High-tech weapons and training personnel, at least they put it in quotes, have been dispatched amid fears of Russian invasion. But Berlin has banned the RAF planes from German airspace and repeats their vow to do, quote, everything to avoid escalating the crisis. Defense Secretary Sick Ben Wallace said the deployment came, quote, in light of the increasingly threatening behavior from Russia. And, of course, U.S. warnings that they're planning a false flag, I suspect. Up to 100,000, though, of Moscow's troops have already been stationed along the border, sparking fears that an invasion could be mere days away. The Kremlin, meanwhile, insists it has no plans to attack, although the buildup of its troops, tanks, and artillery pieces suggests otherwise. However, and this is interesting, Germany hasn't moved from its position of refusing to provide Ukraine with weapons, according to their foreign minister, Annalena Baerbock. She warned on a visit to Kiev that any further escalation would carry a high price for the Russian regime, economic, political, and strategic, but emphasized the need to continue negotiations, saying, we are prepared to have a serious dialogue with Russia because diplomacy is the only way to defuse this highly dangerous situation. And Baerbock added that Germany has offered to send cybersecurity specialists to Ukraine to help investigate last week's cyber attacks, which Ukrainian authorities have blamed on, guess what, whether it's true or not, Russia. Said Baerbock, we've made it clear that we will do everything to avoid escalating the crisis. And the piece says, while the Bundestag continues to oppose involvement, flight path tracking data shows that British aircraft are now avoiding German airspace en route to ferrying anti-armor weaponry to Ukraine. Sounds like Germany, at least, remembers that they've been down this path before. But there's certainly another threat at play here, too, says a piece from Hal Turner's radio show. Russia has withdrawn from further negotiations at the OSCE, or the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. They've pulled their embassy and consulate staff from Ukraine, and here's the most important thing, I suspect, there is no gas flowing through the Yamal pipeline. And furthermore, there's been no gas transit booked to Europe for the month of February. Hey, not like they're expecting it to be cold or anything. And the rest of the story can probably be summarized thusly.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
One seasoned diplomat we spoke to, says the author, about the situation told us, quote, when high-ranking diplomatic staff are of such dishonest character that their sly thinking ignores the obvious, the world is in big trouble. Unquote. And oh yeah, they too note that it appears Europe is now going to be getting zero natural gas from Russia just as winter reaches its coldest point. Because Russia's natural gas giant, Gazprom, is reporting no bookings of natural gas through either the Yamal Europe pipeline for February or through any of the Ukraine pipelines for that same month either. And finally, it concludes, at least the money people are already seeing clearly what's coming. Ukrainian bonds are plunging in markets all over the world. Meanwhile, Russian source RT said on Tuesday morning that Russia will not withdraw their missiles from Kaliningrad, the western enclave that borders Poland. They'll never even consider it, said Kremlin press secretary Dmitry Peskov. In an interview with CNN on Sunday, Peskov was asked about the status of talks on European security between Russia, the U.S., and NATO, and whether Moscow would consider pulling its Iskander missiles, a short-range ballistic system, out of Kaliningrad as a way to reduce tensions. And he responded that, quote, Russia will never discuss with anyone withdrawal of any missiles and any weapons from Kaliningrad because Kaliningrad is a territory of Russia. And with all due respect, we will never tolerate any demands for us to do this or that on our own territory, unquote. And Peskov's demands, continues RT, came after security talks held last week between Russia, the U.S., and NATO, during which the sides discussed ongoing tensions over Ukraine. Moscow has requested written guarantees that the U.S.-led military bloc will not expand into Ukraine, which they've been doing for quite a while, an agreement that Western leaders have said is off the table. Maybe they could have added, that's the whole point of having puppet satellite governments. Although I can't help but suspect that were Russia to go ahead and put missiles back in Cuba, Western military generals might decide that's not quite the same thing at all. But come to think of it, folks, given the Joint Chiefs of Staff and America's so-called defense secretary, who already seem to have sold out to the communist Chinese, maybe that's no longer true. RT as well points out that so-called American intelligence services have been warning for months that they fear an imminent Russian invasion of their neighbor, which the Kremlin has at least so far dismissed as misinformation. And on Thursday, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov announced that he expected Western powers to make a written reply to Moscow's security proposals within a week, and insisted that Russia must be ready to, quote, take counteractions if Western powers don't heed its concerns. And finally, the somewhat hysterical-sounding headlines from the U.S. version of the British Sun newspaper says Russia is reportedly deploying ballistic missiles and teams of snipers to its border with Ukraine amid warnings of a huge war in Europe. Missile launchers, it begins, have been spotted moving west as the Kremlin said that the terse standoff between Moscow and the West over Ukraine has reached, quote, an extremely dangerous phase. The summary from Zero Hedge on Tuesday morning says that it appears that both Washington and Kiev are still convinced Russia is preparing a military offensive against Ukraine to happen at some point before the end of January. But despite Western estimates echoed over the past couple of months that some 100,000 Russian troops are currently near the border, Moscow has been vehement in its denial that it's planning any kind of an invasion. And instead, they're pointing the finger right back at NATO. And on Sunday, Putin's spokesman admitted that Russian troops are on the border because, quote, it can no longer tolerate NATO's own gradual invasion of Ukraine. Sunday's comments by Dmitry Peskov were firm in their denunciation of NATO's continued expansion right up to Russia's doorstep. He said that NATO's military infrastructure has started to get closer and closer to the borders of the Russian Federation, and Russia now sees its national security as directly threatened and endangered. But interestingly, the Zero Hedge piece tends to concentrate on the natural gas situation, noting that the Biden regime is supposedly seeking to reassure America's European partners of, get this, contingency plans should a Ukraine-Russia conflict disrupt the transfer of energy supplies to the European Union. And isn't it funny? These are the people who are destroying America's own energy independence. They hate those carbon-based fuels, and they've made shutting down American pipelines a top priority. Russia, of course, is the source of up to one-third of all of Europe's critical natural gas supplies. And while the Biden White House still threatens severe sanctions against Russia, they still have the potential to use their energy supplies as a retaliatory weapon. Reuters revealed over the weekend that State Department officials had approached various companies to ask where additional supplies might come from, if they were needed, said two industry sources familiar with the discussions, speaking on the usual condition of anonymity, because the matter is very sensitive. The companies told the U.S. government officials that global gas supplies are tight, and there's little gas available to substitute for the huge volumes from Russia. Well, do you bet that both Russia and most of Europe already knew that? In what they admit sounds like stating the obvious to a U.S. regime that seems hell-bent on escalating a showdown with Russia. The U.S. State Department did not ask the companies to increase output, officials noted. They just wanted to know whether they could, if necessary. And said Reuters, although it was unclear which companies U.S. officials may have contacted, Royal Dutch Shell, ConocoPhillips, Exxon all declined to comment when asked if they'd been contacted, and Chevron Corporation, Total, Equinor, and Qatar Energy didn't immediately respond to a request for comment. So they were zero for all of them. Still, should Russia dial back on its supplies to Eastern Europe via pipelines, which it certainly looks like they're already starting to do, the Biden regime would in actuality find itself with no actual counter leverage, because Europe would feel the immediate pain of further heightened energy prices and a lack of supply amid what's already a frigid winter. And yet, these vague promises are still being made. Listen to this one, folks. Quote, the United States promised to have Europe's back if there's an energy shortage due to conflict or sanctions, said an industry source. And your host can't help but think, oh, yeah, remember Afghanistan? And shiver. Oh, yeah, they've got your back all right. Just try to ignore the knife. All of which leads me now to some of the very salient comments from former Congressman and presidential candidate Dr. Ron Paul, M.D. Russia bashing, he begins, is a bipartisan activity in the swamp. Both parties think it makes them look tough and pro-America. But while Republican and Democrat politicians continue to one-up each other on risk-free threats to Russia, they're increasingly risking a devastating nuclear war. It's all fun and games until the missiles start flying. And in this case, we are risking total destruction over who governs eastern Ukraine. Has so much ever been risked for so little? The problem, he continues, with all this tough talk is that politicians start to believe their own rhetoric and propaganda. As a result, they don't make sound decisions based on objective facts, but instead, and gee, have we ever seen this before, make rash decisions based on faulty misinformation. For example, when U.S. politicians talk about Russia massing troops on the border with Ukraine, they leave out the fact that those troops are actually inside Russia. But with U.S. troops in some 150 countries overseas, you'd think Washington might pause before criticizing the aggression of troops stationed inside a country's own borders. They also leave out the reasons why Russia might be concerned over its neighbor Ukraine. Even CNN, though, recently reported that the Biden regime approved another $200 million in military aid to Ukraine last month, making the total nearly $500 million in weapons over the past year. But admittedly, I guess that's just a tiny fraction of what they just gave to the terrorists in Afghanistan's Taliban. Imagine, though, says Dr. Paul, if China was sending $500 million in weapons to Mexico to strengthen and embolden a hyper-aggressive anti-U.S. regime. Would the U.S. not be massing troops near the Mexican border? Now, here, folks, I have to pause and say, hey, honestly, although it's not being reported, there are certainly indications that China's been doing exactly that. Arguably, they might even be fools if they weren't, given the fact that the Biden regime has made the southern border an open invitation for invasion. And, of course, one thing we know for sure, the traitors and the Pentagon could care less about defending the southern border. Back to Dr. Paul, there is that issue about the U.S.-backed overthrow of the democratically elected Ukrainian government in 2014, which is the starting point of all these recent problems. And this week, Yahoo News reported that the CIA is training Ukrainian paramilitaries on U.S. soil. Hey, don't worry, Dr. Paul, they're probably planning on using them to invade Georgia or South Carolina. Recent talks, though, between the U.S. and Russia failed before they even began, with the U.S. side refusing to even consider ending useless and provocative NATO expansion eastward. NATO is a Cold War relic, he says, that should have been disbanded, along with the Warsaw Pact, because it serves no purpose, and its constant saber-rattling puts us at risk in conflicts that have nothing to do with actual U.S. national security. How embarrassing, concludes Dr. Paul, it is to hear Blinken ridiculing Russia for coming to the aid of ally Kazakhstan as a color revolution with likely U.S. backing was brewing. Blinken even said, quote, I think one lesson in recent history is that once Russians are in your house, it's sometimes very difficult to get them to leave. He said this, added Dr. Paul, with a straight face, even as the U.S. continues to illegally occupy a large part of Syria, continues to occupy part of Iraq against the will of that country's parliament, and occupied a good part of Afghanistan for 20 years. Incidentally, he added, as soon as the regime change attempt was put down in Kazakhstan, Russian and allied troops began leaving the country. But, of course, the reflexively pro-war U.S. media doesn't report anything outside their narrative. So what to do about Russia? Well, for one, stop backing regime change along Russia's borders, including Belarus, Kazakhstan, and elsewhere. Stop meddling in foreign elections. Look at how we, he said, wasted 4 years on false claims that the Russians had meddled in ours. When in fact, your host notes, it turns out to have been enemies domestic and also foreign, but from the other side of the globe. Oh, yeah, he continues, end weapon shipments and all aid to Ukraine, end sanctions, and reimagine the U.S. defense budget as a budget to actually defend the U.S. Really, it's not that complicated. Just stop trying to rule the world and maybe, as your host adds, focus on defending a country that's pretty well being destroyed from within at this point. And we'll be right back after the bottom of the hour break. Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. I am your host, Mark Call. We've been talking about a whole bunch of different stories that basically make a singular point. Yes, things are really, really ugly, from economic meltdown and genocide to outright World War III, but we've known that for a while. What set this week apart, though, was that it was one where the wheels pretty much just came off the big lie wagon. Here's an example. We'll start off subtle. This piece comes from the UK's Daily Exposé, and it says deaths among male teens have increased by 53% following the COVID-1984 not vaccination back in 2021, and those death spikes correlate perfectly. Who could have thought it with the uptake of doses 1, 2, and of course now 3, and soon to be boosters forever and ever, or as long as those dumbed down enough to take them manage to live. The story quotes an investigation for what's called the Office of National Statistics in the UK, and it's revealed that since the COVID-19 vaccine, sick, began to be rolled out to teenagers, there's been a 53% rise in the number of deaths due to all causes among males aged 15 through 19, and each spike in deaths correlates perfectly with the spike of the administration of the first, second, and then third, and soon to be subsequent doses, of the COVID-19 injection to this age group. I'll follow that up with a story from Peter Schwab, B of the Epoch Times and Zero Hedge, and I'll ask the question right up front, can you connect the dots, that says, health departments in a number of states have confirmed to the Epoch Times that they're looking into this steep surge in the mortality rates for people aged 18 through 49 back in 2021, a majority of which aren't directly linked to COVID-19, but, may be linked to something else. Can you guess? Deaths among people aged 18 to 49, it says, increased more than 40% in the 12 months ending in October 21. We talked about the actuarial data from a life insurance company in Indianapolis last week, and this certainly sounds very consistent. Compared to the same period in 2018 to 19 before the pandemic, according to analysis, this time by the Epoch Times, of death certificate data from the CDC, the Centers for Death and Control. But still, though, they say, the agency doesn't have full 2021 figures because death certificate data has a lag of up to 8 weeks or more, and of course, maybe some of them need to be massaged or redacted a bit, too. The surge differs greatly, though, from state to state, with the most dramatic increase in young to middle-aged deaths occurring in the South, Midwest, and the Left Coast, while the northeastern states generally saw milder spikes. Public health authorities in several states with some of the largest increases are examining the issue. I wonder if they're going to actually engage their brains or just listen to see what it is that they're told to tell people. Texas saw the age 18 through 49 mortality jump by 61%, the second highest in the country. They're looking at the data, said Chris Van Dusen, the head of media relations at the Texas Department of State Health Services. We'll get back to you. While Florida, which saw an increase of 51%, is also probing the matter. And what are you willing to bet, folks? And when it comes time to lie to you about what they think is going on here, none of them are about to admit which batch numbers of the poison Zyklon B injections might be associated with these dramatic increases in deaths due to all causes either. There is this tidbit, though. For those under the age of 18, mortality actually decreased about 0.4% in 2020 compared to 2019. Can you think of anything that didn't happen to 5 to 11-year-olds or even slightly older victims that might have changed since? In the 12 months ending October 21, total mortality fell by some 3.3% compared to the same period in 2018 through 2019. And I'd be willing to bet, folks, that now that the Zyklon B injection is finding its way into the bodies of preteens, we're going to see a dramatic change there, too, which is also almost certainly going to be lied about. You know what? Let's call this a related piece, too. The state of Minnesota is now offering $200 gift cards to families that want to kill their kids. They're giving $200 per child to families that are willing to poison poke their age 5 to 11-year-olds and get them vaccinated with the experimental injections. Based on UK data, there's approximately a 1 in a million or less chance that the disease will be fatal in children. They have a far greater chance of drowning. And, of course, now, if they take the gift card, they may get themselves a new PlayStation or something, but have a far greater chance of having heart issues before they even get to use it. Says Jim Hoft and the Gateway Pundit, as well as a local report from KSTP-TV, a new incentive has been announced in the effort to kill more children. Yeah, folks, your host paraphrased that a bit. In Minnesota, where on Tuesday, Governor Tim Walz said that families who get their 5 to 11-year-old fully Zyklon B injected in January or February can have a $200 Visa gift card per child. But in order to get those gift cards, the first and second doses of the poison poke must be administered between January 1st and February 28th. And officials say families may receive one gift card for each eligible child who is sacrificed during the eligible time frame. Children have to be registered once they've completed their two-dose series, blah-de-blah-de-blah, and the gift card request will be fulfilled through March of 2022. Doesn't say here whether the kids have to live through March 2022 to get the bounty or not. In your host's opinion, folks, this is satanically evil, but I suspect you already got that part. Unless you think there's any hyperbole in that last comment, here next is a story about the Biden regime compiling a database of religious objectors to what they intend to do to them via an obscure agency within the regime called the Pretrial Services Agency, which announced their Orwellian tracking scheme on Tuesday that could serve, I would suggest will, as a model for the entire Big Brother, formerly free government in the United States to collect the names and, quote, personal religious information of, well, first anyway, federal employees who make religious accommodation requests for religious exemption to the federally mandated, utterly unconstitutional Zyklon B vaccination requirement. This according to the Daily Signal. And they say, quote, the primary purpose of the secured electronic file repository is to collect, maintain, use, and, to the extent appropriate and necessary, disseminate employee religious exception request information collected by the agency in the context of the federally mandated COVID-19 vaccination requirement, unquote. And this is right out of the Federal Register. The announcement doesn't actually explain why the agency needs to create this dystopian list of deplorables, except to say that it will, quote, assist the agency in the collecting, storing, dissemination, and disposal, yeah, sure, of employee religious exemption request information collected and maintained by the agency. In other words, they're making a list, and they want to find out who's really naughty. Oh, and it doesn't say either what the agency is going to do with this information after they have decided what to do about an employee's religious accommodation request. But maybe, folks, you've heard the term wet work before, and neither does the announcement explain why the Biden regime chose to test this policy in an agency with, this is interesting, a majority black staff who are both more religious and less vaccinated than other groups. Could it be there's a message hidden in here? So much, says the Daily Signal, for the president's commitment to, yeah, racial equity. And the story goes on to suggest that the regime is using this tiny agency as a testbed for deploying that database across the entire U.S. government, noting the announcement was relegated to an obscure group and given just 30 days for public comment. Not that public comment matters squat anymore. None of it, after all, was ever even remotely constitutional. And if it's not obvious, folks, recall that Big Brother, having pretty well trashed the Constitution a long time ago anyway, has treated the whole concept of religious exemptions as nothing more than a joke. Take, for example, the Department of Defense, which has failed to grant a single religious exemption on behalf of any service members that have requested one from the Zyklon B federal mandate. Although a group of Navy SEALs were successful in their recent federal lawsuit against Big Brother and the regime on claims that their rights of conscience under the First Amendment and RFRA, or Religious Freedom Restoration Act, were being obviously violated. In short, summarizes Zero Hedge, be a good little Fourth Reich German, or American, or you will go on a list, and we know what happens next. After all of that, we need some good news, so here we go. This is courtesy of a number of sources on the web, including Zero Hedge and InfoWars. Both of them have a nice collection of pictures. And if you've seen historic renderings of Soviet-era propaganda artwork, you know that these are masterfully well done, too. The imitation Soviet-style artwork appropriately depicts the Biden-Fuhrer, senile creepy quid pro Joe Biden, and America's own Dr. Mengele, Tony Fauci, as what they are, tyrants. And they appeared overnight in the downtown swamp, Washington District of Criminals. Four separate art pieces, they look like major posters that were distributed in a number of places, ridicule the Biden and Fauci COVID dictates and accompanying hysteria. The first piece shows an angry Biden holding up a hammer that says OSHA, surrounded by the word comply. The second shows a group of children covered in red masks looking up admiringly at their Fuhrer, while Biden is emblazoned with a halo made out of syringes. That one is appropriately captioned, "Good kids are compliant kids." The third shows the American dictator sitting at a throne holding a coronavirus particle with the words mandate, segregate, and subjugate above him. Oh, and I really love how they did his eyes. While the fourth piece, entitled Trust the Scientism, shows Fauci dressed in a cassock holding a giant syringe, while a radioactive halo surrounds his gnome-like visage. So given that D.C. is full of the elite who supported these COVID mandates and restrictions, it's very fitting that these art pieces have appeared right in their backyard. And you know what, folks? Your host will go a step further. I think it's downright encouraging that even the art community, or at least part of it, has awakened to how far gone this tyranny is. And needless to say, folks, there are queries out there asking just who the amazing artist is that produced these, quote, absolute gems. Some no doubt want him or her dead, or at least put into the D.C. gulag, along with the January 6th protesters, while others are wanting not only to praise the artwork, but probably buy lots of copies for themselves. And I can't help but think that they would sell extremely well nationwide about now. Next, I'm going to do a brief string of what you might call throwaway headlines, but the key thing to note here is not one of them comes from the Babylon Bee or the Onion. Yeah, folks. We wouldn't have believed it not long ago, but now the insane and the obscene are a daily thing. Case in point, from S.D. Wells' Unnatural News, and oh, good grief, a substitute teacher was ejected from a school for failing to meow, you heard that right, at a student during roll call who self-identifies as a cat. A normal student tells the substitute teacher that she has to meow back at him because he self-identifies as a cat. The flabbergasted teacher then asks if there was a litter box in the classroom. The student leapt out of its seat. The teacher sarcastically barked "Roof!" at him, and then the cat boy scurried out of the classroom and headed to, where else, the principal's office to report the insensitive indiscretion of the sub. I guess, says Wells, she rubbed his fur the wrong way. In totalitarian New York City, though, it gets worse. From Kara Castronova and the Gateway Pundit, an unvaccinated child, how dare this young thing be out in public, was seen and videoed being taken away by NYPD's finest from the Museum of Natural History in Manhattan Wednesday evening. The upsetting video is up online, and the girl was with her mother as part of a protest against the unprecedented, unconstitutional, downright Nazi tyrannical vaccine mandates that have swept the now rotten apple. All children over the age of 5, Achtung, must have their required COVID vaccine und papers in order to enter indoor spaces like the museum. But the group entered the museum without the mandated vaccine IDs and were denied entry by staff after paying for their tickets. They were asked to leave because they did not have their mark of the vaccine passport, whereupon security called the NYPD. And then, according to witnesses, locked them inside until the Gestapo could get there. And after a peaceful protest that lasted about 3 hours, the police arrested the group and hauled the little girl away to show her, yeah, what life is like in a police state. The video, and I'm going to say it, folks, shows the terrified, crying little girl being taken away by two great big hunking, apparently female pigs, wearing their black hoodlum face masks, of course, who put her in a paddy wagon and hauled her off. And as the story explains, all children in New York City are now required by executive order to have the COVID-19 Zyklon B poke and accompanying documentation in order to go in anywhere, like a restaurant, amusement park, arcade, movie theater, music or concert venue, museums, aquariums and zoos, professional sports arenas, indoor stadiums, convention centers, hotel meeting and event spaces, performing arts theaters, bowling alleys, pool, billiard halls, recreational game centers, gyms, indoor play areas, and you get the picture. Let me say it again. They have now succeeded, folks. New York City is hell on earth. The same evidently goes for the no longer even remotely American, but communist to the core, public-private CCP partner, we want to be your tracking phone provider, Apple, which has now sentenced all employees, says a piece from Ethan Huff at Natural News, to the lethal Zyklon B injection, saying they have 4 weeks to comply with the COVID booster mandate. Yeah, the latest one, or else you're not fully vaxxed, or else. You must show proof of getting the booster or face potential termination. But as more and more people are getting duped and boosted, some of them at least are waking up, often as a result of an associated tragedy, 26-year-old Swiss sprinter and Olympic athlete Sarah Acho has been diagnosed with pericarditis just 5 days after she received the Pfizer booster poke, said COVID World. Sarah announced on her socialist media accounts on Monday that she'd been diagnosed with pericarditis, a.k.a. inflammation of the membrane surrounding the heart, just 5 days after she took the booster poke. Get this. First time around, she got the Moderna Zyklon B version. She decided to take the Pfizer vaccine for her booster shot, though, after she said she was told it was, get this, folks, safer than Moderna. If that's true, it's probably in the same sense that shooting yourself in the head with a .22 is safer than shooting yourself in the mouth with a .45. According to her two Facebook posts, she received the so-called booster shot on December 22nd. Then on the 27th, she started to feel dizzy and felt tightness in her chest. And at the end of the post, Acho admitted she was upset and frustrated, claiming that nobody is talking about the side effects of the COVID-not vaccines. Well, folks, obviously, she's not getting her news from the right sources, and maybe that's because those who are talking about it are either banned from the likes of two Facebook and Twitter, or worse. Here's what might be worse, at least for some guys. As it turns out, one man's bodily reaction to the Wuhan Fauci bioweapon has proven that the virus and the side effects of taking the poison injection isn't really confined just to the throat and upper respiratory tract, nor to the heart and cardiovascular system, although I guess you could make the point that this is kind of related. According to a foreign medical journal, says a piece from Zero Hedge and Tyler Durden, an Iranian man has drawn the interest of doctors there after reporting what he called agonizing pain in his penis that turned out to have been caused by blood clots that seriously affected the married man's sexual health. The man, who it says wasn't named in the news reports about the incident, maybe you can guess why, suffered penile pain for 3 days before finally seeing a urologist who referred him for tests. And remember, one of the major side effects of the mRNA clot shot and DNA modification pokes, which along with COVID itself produced lots and lots of the spike protein, is that they cause blood clots, not just in the heart, but as we're seeing more and more, all over the body. The man's discomfort began following, well, let's just say sexual activity. He hadn't experienced any trauma, though, he told the doctor in his pelvic area, that might explain the alarming behavior. And as the story helpfully points out, one of the reasons for this alarming behavior is the tendency of the COVID spike protein and the clot shot, which reprograms the body to produce it, to also thus produce blood clots. And in fact, as we're seeing more and more, that's often the cause of Zyklon B poke-related death. Writing for the American Journal of American Medicine, a team of medics said they believed that COVID had caused clots to form in the man's penis, trapping blood inside the erection chambers. Doctors had to draw blood from the affected organ using a needle because ice packs just didn't have the desired effect in bringing down the stiffness. Said Morteza Bargeri, roughly 20 to 50% of hospitalized patients with COVID infection have abnormal coagulation tests. Now, what he's talking about here, folks, is not just COVID, but it's the spike protein, which, as we know, at least if we don't listen to the criminally negligent networks, is a direct result of the DNA mod stemming from the Zyklon B injections. Continued Bargeri, searching the literature, showed no previously published similar cases of deep dorsal penile vein thrombosis following COVID infection. Huh. But it turns out, says the story, that the Iranian man is not alone. Others have similarly reported, let's just say, difficult issues with sexual arousal. Now, for those men that have suffered a situation like this, obviously this is no laughing matter. But what strikes your host about this entire story, indeed this set of stories, is the following. Most of us have probably encountered a relative or a friend or a coworker who simply will not hear the facts when it comes to why they shouldn't be injecting themselves with experimental DNA modification drugs. Indeed, they're far more likely to die of a heart attack or other related side effects than they ever would have been of dying of the booga booga flu, especially now that the Omicron variant has pretty well made it a non-event anyway. Most people don't even notice that they've had it. All they end up with is lasting natural immunity. That is, if they don't destroy it with the Zyklon B injection. But the point is, and I'm sure most of you have probably noticed and had this experience, you ain't going to talk them out of it. There are no facts, no statistics, no actual data, unless maybe they know somebody that took the poke and died pretty much right there on the spot, that are going to talk them out of believing the great big whopping lie, succumbing to the Biden Fuhrer and his mandates, and of course, drinking the Kool-Aid. Taking the injection. Pericarditis, myocarditis, heart attack, stroke, deep vein thrombosis. Now, none of that sounds nearly as scary as the tickly throat horror of the booga 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 COVID Omicron variant. But honestly, though, I can't help but think, folks, if you know some guy who's not scared at all of taking the poison poke or of dying of a heart attack or stroke or even being disabled with myocarditis, basically the most common immediate and short-term side effects, ask him how he might feel if his penis swelled up, causing intense pain until it eventually fell off, and then see what he thinks about the poison poke. It may even be less than a 1 in a million chance, but hey, it's probably still scarier than that equally unlikely chance that he might die of the dreaded sniffles. At this point, it's really hard to determine just exactly what of the things that are going on today is more insane than others, but this is certainly one of them at the top of the heap. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has commented on it too, denouncing other states who have fired their unvaccinated healthcare workers, the kind that have been steadfast throughout the COVID-19 pandemic so far. And by the way, they're smarter too, because they haven't succumbed to the Zyklon B injection, so they clearly have been paying attention to the literature and to what's going on around them. And yet, these same states are hiring fully vaccinated replacements, and putting them on the job, even though they're actively suffering from the very booga booga flu that people are so scared of. He called the move to rehire staffers infected with the Wuhan Fauci flu, COVID-19, which was meant to mitigate staffing shortages as, and I think he's right, absolutely insane. Oh yeah, and it also tells you folks that this has absolutely nothing to do with your health. At a January 13 press conference, the governor of Florida said the medical mandate for the nurses and doctors, what they're trying to do is actually insane. In other states, they have fired nurses for not having, and here he meant taking the poison poke, even though most of them have natural immunity. So they fire them, but now they're shorthanded. So what do? They're bringing back on the job vaccinated nurses who are currently COVID positive. If you're unvaccinated, naturally immune, and uninfected, they fire you. But if you're COVID positive and have taken the poison poke, he didn't put it that way, well, we still know most of the people that are COVID positive now are. They're going back on the job. It just shows you that the CMS, the so-called Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services mandate, as he put it, is absolutely insane, especially given the ineffectiveness of these shots that don't actually stop transmission, unquote. Oh yeah, and by the way, he's talking about so-called health officials and hospitals sick in three different states so far, California, Arizona, and Rhode Island, to allow vaccinated health workers, even if they've got the booga booga flu, to return to work. Because they're shorthanded, because they're idiots, and they fire too many of those who wouldn't take the Zyklon B injection. From there, I'll go to a story that, even your host has to admit, surprised me when I first heard it. From the Epoch Times, and of all places, Britain. And it should be good news, that is, if we weren't so skeptical of hearing anything even remotely like this. Restrictions, says the piece, including COVID-19, Mark of the Beast passes, mask mandates, and work-from-home orders will be removed. Yeah, you heard that right, in England, said UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson on Wednesday. Johnson also suggested that self-isolation rules might even be thrown out at the end of March, as the CCP pandemic becomes a mere endemic. Effective immediately, it continues, the UK government is no longer asking people to work from home, and the COVID pass mandate for nightclubs and large events won't be renewed when it expires on January 26th. And also from Thursday, indoor mask wearing will no longer be compulsory anywhere in England. But wait, there's more. The requirement for secondary school pupils to wear masks during class and in communal areas will also be removed from the Department of Education's sick national guidance. Roaring cheers from lawmakers could be heard in the House of Commons following Johnson's announcement about masks. And as for people that might now decide to visit the United Kingdom, Johnson said the government is reviewing testing arrangements on travel and that an announcement can be expected there over coming days. So, boy, good grief. You gotta say it. Is sanity breaking out in Britain? For crying out loud, that's probably one of the last things most of us would have expected. Or maybe if you're cynical enough, and we ought to be by now, you might be wondering, does that mean the next shoe is about to drop? Are we just days away from seeing a breakout in Britain of the Ebola Marburg variant of the Booga Booga flu? Are you-know-who and their puppeteers already working on the next patented not-vaccine injection? Inquiring minds want to know, and I can't help but think, if history is our guide, we might not have to wait too long to find out.